Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by ELAC 825. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860M 97.5 HD2, part of the Beasley Media Group, ready to help you move into the weekend, talking about all the news in the world of sports. Congratulations, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I was hesitant to text you the other day.
I wouldn't have responded.
Well, but you did.
Nothing personal, okay. But I was, the last thing I was looking at is my cell phone.
So we're going to have Leroy Hort on in a few minutes, Michigan man himself. And we're going to talk some college football final. But I want to tell our listeners how my day started when I texted Jeff, and his response was, I'm going to miss the game. I had flight trouble. So I was like hesitant to send you any message after that. Knowing that you had travel difficulties on top of the anxiety of watching your team in a college football playoff semifinal. Did you make it home in time to see said game?
Yeah, I missed part of the first quarter, but it's my own fault. I mean, I scheduled the flight before I knew what time the Rose Bowl was. But I do have to say that airline, specifically United, if there are bins that are open, don't take people's luggage away and tell them they're going to have to go get it afterwards, because you need to figure out the weight on the plane. Okay. Half of the bins were empty, and they told us before we got on the plane, we have to check our bags because the bins are full.
Were there any other Michigan fans on the plane?
Which then I'm sitting there going, oh, no. As far as I know, there were not many other Michigan fans, but I will tell you, I did check the airline prices of several cities afterwards. I got mine weeks before, not because I'm optimistic, just because.
Just to be prepared.
But, like the flights from Detroit to Houston.
What's it, after like $3,000?
Yeah, it was crazy.
So that when we're saying flights, because Jeff will be attending the national championship, he was prepared for a
unless we get snowed in for the first time in how many years that we actually have snow.
You're going to fly out of Philly. You'll be okay. If you were going out of Newark, I'd have concerns about whether you'd get there. But I think you'll be okay for that. Are you okay? So tell me about, because you watched the game with your son. And he had an observation about your level of tension watching said game.
I watched the game with my son and my fiance, and I can tell you that my son said that he has never seen me that stressed watching a sporting event.
Tell me the experience.
Because I was convinced. I mean, look, once Alabama took the lead, if you watch the game, there were enough mistakes to sit there and go,
this isn't our
go again.
Yeah.
Including, by the way, first play, interception, which is called back. And then there were other plays in the first half. And then at the end of the game, on a punt that all they need to do is catch it and kneel down and then get to overtime, they put in a new punt returner who flubbed the punt and literally recovered it about a half a yard from the end zone. They could have lost the Rose Bowl and the semifinal on a safety.
It was particularly that play where I wondered whether your heart stopped and I'd be doing the show by myself this week, because you did not survive that experience.
Having a defibrillator would have been a good idea at that moment all around the United States.
So everybody that knows you saw a different side of you on during the national championship game, but you guys won.
No, you mean during the semifinal.
Or during the semifinal game.
Yeah.
But you guys won. So are you, I haven't been to like a game like this with you. Are you like a paint your face, take your shirt off kind of guy? How are you going to be out of the game?
I haven't painted my face since like sophomore year in college.
All right. So you're not going to be the guy on TV with like the big M block letter.
Yeah, you're not going to. And I'm not going to be the guy who, you know, it's funny. Every time something happens in a game, the cameraman is able to find the person who has their hands clasped over their head.
That won't be you.
It is amazing that it's like they're looking for that person.
Well, now, in fairness, during the Eagles game last week, they found the what the hell woman. So she was, have you seen the replay of that?
I've also seen the struggle she's having because people are putting her picture on their shirts without permission.
Well, the lawyer in you would definitely have some opinions
about
that.
That's right.
But I
mean,
there
are some rights issues.
Her timing was perfect, and we may have all been sitting saying the exact same thing at home. But I assume that that's what you were saying when the punt was fumbled at the half yard line.
You thought I was saying what the hell?
I didn't think you were speaking at that point.
I don't remember exactly what my reaction was, but I'm pretty sure that on the air we're not allowed to say a lot of those words.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, for a person who was able to watch it a little bit dispassionately, I don't really have a rooting interest. I, you know, root because of you.
Right.
They were fun games. I mean, they were really entertaining football games to watch.
So does that mean that the committee is now vindicated?
Well, not in the eyes of Florida or Florida State, I mean.
Oh, I don't think Florida State can complain anymore.
You mean when you lose 63-3 or whatever?
Yeah, I think you lose the right to complain. Granted, a lot of their players didn't play.
Did not play.
But they should have played for pride at that point. Losing by that score in that embarrassing fashion, you can't then come out after the game and say, we should have been in the semifinal.
It did take away some of the steam from their argument, that's for sure. I mean, look, it was the most attended game in the event's history at the Rose Bowl. The ratings were enormous, 27 million fans. You know, I'm a ratings guy. It's a top 10 cable telecast of all time. It was highest for a non-NFL sporting event since 2018. I mean, it peaked at 32 million viewers at one point. That's a lot of eyeballs on a football game. And the Sugar Bowl, same thing, came down to the last play of the game, drew 18 million viewers, peaked at 24. So, I mean, people were interested in watching these games.
And would the ratings have been higher if they made that game earlier?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what time did it end? It ended after 12:30.
Started at 8:45.
East Coast time.
It's ridiculous. Silly. I don't like late game starts. I'm too old for that crap anymore.
But, well, look, once my game was over, I wanted to stay up and watch the other game. I couldn't.
You couldn't?
I had nothing left in the tank at that point. It was like, okay, we face it wherever we faced.
So you spilled your bucket watching the game. You're just, yes. Imagine how tired the players are and you're exhausted watching it.
Yes, I'm exhausted. You're exhausted,
I need a nap.
My aggravation and elation.
Yeah,
yes.
Like, I need to go to bed. Any thoughts about your own experience before we go and talk to Leroy about his experience, the game, what he expects to see?
It was fun, but I still believe that blowouts are underrated, and I still would prefer for my health to have blowouts.
Oh, by the way, tell me about the Alabama fan that got in your text thread.
Oh, you know, every once in a while you get a text from somebody, and I got a text on New Year's Eve that said "Roll Tide." They were good natured about it. I did not encounter, and I usually don't encounter people that are obnoxious about it. I'm lucky to be surrounded by people who it's fun to be with. I have one friend who is good naturedly has ribbed me, who's not an Alabama fan, but just thinks it's fun to tweak me.
Okay,
so.
And that's not me, for our listeners. That is not
me. No, it is not you. And if the person does come on the air, I will make sure to remind him of that.
Well now I know who it is.
Come on again.
All right. So your friends let you watch the game in peace. You were ignoring them anyway. Are you? When we?
Oh no. There were as I went through my text, mostly after the game. One of my college friends actually texted me when Michigan fell behind. Either this is going to be one of the greatest comebacks of all time, or it's going to just be something to add to the collage of misery.
The collage of misery. Oh God! You know, this is from. I have to listen to this from the guy that had to celebrate playing in the Pinstripe Bowl. So, like, I don't really get the collage of.
But you won.
We did.
Congratulations to you, Rutgers won a bowl game.
That's right, we did.
When is the last time Rutgers won a bowl game?
Probably the last time we played in the Pinstripe Bowl.
When was that?
Like 11.
The Pinstripe Bowl hasn't been around that long.
It was like 2011 or 2012. I went with my brother. It was fun. I mean, it's a terrible place to see a game. Yankee Stadium, to see a football game, is not the most desirable.
I hate to tell you, Yankee Stadium is not a great place to see a baseball game.
By the way, while we wait for Leroy to join us, I will give you the option. Would you like to discuss the Pop-Tarts Bowl before he joins us or after? Because
I don't want to discuss the
Pop-Tarts Bowl. Oh, we do. We need to get Dave Raymond on to talk about that. That mascot was awesome. The marketing was amazing. The Cheez-It Bowl followed.
Okay, and what were the ratings on the Pop-Tarts Bowl?
Better than any other bowl game that wasn't a Big Six game.
I doubt it was because there was a Pop-Tart mascot.
The amount of...
Who played in it?
Oh God, now I got nobody cared See, about but, who played in the game. It didn't become about that. No, it became a marketing thing.
Let's face
thing.
It. It's become for bowls that the ratings are based on the alumni basis. Other than the national championship,
NC State against Kansas State.
Nobody's watching those games other than people who have nothing to do or people that are have a vested interest in those games. That's the unfortunate part, because with most of the bowl games, the problem is now it's not the best team that wins it. It's the one that has the least amount of attrition before the game starts.
That game was K-State against NC State, not the largest fan bases, and it drew 4.3 million viewers to watch that game. So, I mean, it was down from the previous year, but they played Florida State against Oklahoma in that window. So, okay, of course, it will be down.
Which Pop-Tart was he? What flavor?
It seemed like a fruit one. I don't know. He was very. It was just very entertaining the way that they did it. And all of
you
a sudden,
you don't even know what kind of fruit. You want to discuss this, and you're not even going to be able to tell me what flavor the.
Well,
Pop-Tart
they didn't
is.
Let me taste the thing.
Well, what did he look like?
He looked like
was
a Pop-Tart.
Was he blue? Was he red? Was he s'mores colors? What was he? You should know these
clearly,
things. If you're going to bring. I don't want to discuss the Pop-Tart Bowl. The fact is, we've now gone down this horrible road. And if you're going to go down the road, then you should have the details that matter, which is what flavor was the Pop-Tart.
You are about to be saved by Leroy. So we will leave it there and we will come back, talk about Pop-Tarts after we talk to Leroy. Jeff has been saved from talking about Pop-Tarts for now because Leroy Horde, the host of the Tobin and Leroy Show on 560 AM WQAM, joins us. Michigan man himself with his Michigan gear on. Leroy, yes, congratulations on the win. Thanks for giving us a little time.
Hey, no problem. What a game, wasn't it? The game from start to finish. I said this last week, and everybody laughed at me. Michigan was the better team. I believe that from top to bottom, when you go quarterback, running backs, defensive line, offensive line, Michigan had the better team, right? Alabama might have the better name at this point. But if you look at it, Michigan had the better team. And they started out, and the only thing that worried me during the entire course of that game was it seemed like Michigan was blowing Alabama out, and they were always within one score. And then they took the lead. And I'm like, what in the hell just happened here? We've been kicking their butts all game, and now we're down. And it was the fumbles, the muff punt, the, you know, just things happen. That's sports. But Alabama, I got to tell you, Nick Saban, he was my defense coordinator when I was in Cleveland, right? That guy's, he's smart. But I can't figure this out. Why would you let Michigan run the same blitz the whole entire game without making any adjustments? And that was four guys strong, right? You see all the guys line up on the strong side of the field.
Right.
Right? And then bring the safety down the weak side, and they never block the safety the whole damn game. I'm like, wow. I said, I can't believe I'm watching this. Because you're always thinking, okay, they got away with it a couple of times. What is the adjustment going to be? And they never did anything. So Michigan ran their games, brought that guy on the weak side. They're more athletic than anybody thought because everybody was trying to tell us Milroe was the most athletic guy on the field, but he could never get free. And then the game went into overtime, and I'm like, yeah, Michigan doing Michigan stuff. They're going to run it. They're going to dare you to stop the run. All the things that you expect from Alabama in the past years. And it was incredible to watch. I was baffled at how good that defense was throughout the course of that game.
Does it fall on Tommy Reese and having a 31-year-old offensive coordinator to not make the adjustments that you're saying that they should have made?
I mean, I'm guessing yes, maybe. You know, and here's the thing. Maybe they were running that based on your alignment, and that no matter what play you went to, you were going to get that same look. So I would say it was a better coaching job by the defensive coaches for Michigan than it was a poor coaching job by Alabama, because it seemed like the same look for the whole game but I'm wondering what adjustments they tried to make. Here's the other thing. You know what the hardest thing to do in football? It's to go play a football game and scared to let your quarterback throw the ball. And that's what it looked like. They didn't have a lot of confidence in him. I mean, it's easy to play in the SEC when you're playing against teams and you could just run your guy out. He's athletic, make a play, throw it down the field. He's got a cannon for an arm. Okay, but how's that going to look when you play against a disciplined defense when they're going to line up and they're going to be where they're supposed to be and all those wide open guys aren't there? Or you change the timing of when he has to make these plays. So a lot of times in college, guy could sit back there and pat the ball forever, right? We took and shrunk that time of Milroe, and now he's looking at the rush. He ain't even looking downfield. So at that point, it don't matter who's open because he ain't looking.
His center seemed to be kind of seeing ghosts a little bit too. He had lots of problems.
Rolling it.
Yeah, I mean, that last play of the game wasn't supposed to be a run up the middle. I mean, you could see that the running back was open out the backfield, but the snap was low, so he never had a chance. He had to run it. But, you know, you talk about what happens when you play a team like this. You lead to a season low 288 yards total. You lead to 6 total sacks, 4 in the first half. So, yeah, I guess they made an adjustment. They only gave up 2 sacks in the second half after giving up 4 in the first half. Talk about this defense. And, you know, the offense gets a lot of attention between J.J. McCarthy and Blake Corum, but talk about the players on this defense and just how nasty they are that to dominate an SEC team like that.
And how disciplined they are.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, it was pretty amazing to me that every guy looked like he knew exactly what to do and where he was supposed to be during the whole course of that game. And that's what it takes to beat a team like Alabama. Because in most cases, a team like Alabama is going to have more talent than you. Right? Now, I didn't think that was the case against Michigan. But that's normally what they do. And they wear you out. So regardless of how bad you're playing, or how good you're playing, you're not going to be able to sustain that. And teams like Alabama are always going to have a chance to come out in the end. But from start to finish, the relentlessness of that defense, how they made tackles, open field tackles, how they tackled Milroe when he was scrambling, how they got after the quarterback, how they stopped the run, right?
I'd kill for the Eagles to tackle like that. I'd like to know if I can take your defensive coordinator up here now to teach my guys how to do a damn thing.
You know what makes it hard in the NFL? Is that it's a thing that you don't practice, but you expect perfection, right? There's a lot of guys that play in the secondary that don't know how to tackle because they've never had to. You know, the term lockdown corner doesn't mean support corner. Right? It doesn't mean that guy's coming up. And so when you find these guys, the Browns have a guy that he'll come up and make a play. And when you have those guys who are also cover corners, you got somebody special. But the other thing is, what makes Philly so difficult right now and why they're in such a tough spot is because they're in a different position than they've been in the last 2 years. The last 2 years, they have determined what the other team's going to do. You have to adjust to us, and we're going to go about our business, and we're going to continue to get better until the playoffs, right?
Right. Well, we're going to get back to Michigan a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jason likes to talk Eagles. We could talk Eagles afterwards. Yeah. But and I do want to talk about lockdown corners because I think Michigan's got one, if not two. But before we get there, J.J. McCarthy, as – for people who don't know, who have been living on another channel or another planet, Leroy was MVP of the Rose Bowl back in the day. Talk about this year's MVP. How good was J.J. McCarthy in this game? And how important is his mental state to how far they've gotten and where they can get?
I think the most important thing about him is he always seems under control, right? Kind of a, you know, he's not a Jim Harbaugh quarterback. Jim Harbaugh is a linebacker trapped in a quarterback's body, right? That's you know, he was intense when he played. Mm-hmm. He was that guy, right?
Still is.
He's laid back. He, you know, he just lets the game flow. He makes plays when need to be made. whatever that is, one of the most impressive things that I took from J.J. McCarthy, with the way everybody worries about I, me, my, the way everybody worries about I need to get mine for the next level, I think people need to see me shine, was a game, I can't remember who it was against. They literally had, what, 8 passes the whole game? And they ran the ball the entire game?
Penn State.
Yeah, it was Penn State.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it takes an incredible leader to understand that this isn't about me and where I'm trying to go. This is about winning this game today. A lot of guys don't, you know, can't handle that. And so from that standpoint, I've always, you know, been even more impressed with his excitement, only throwing 8 passes against a quality team, because he realized, hey, the most important thing is getting this win.
Talk about the other matchup in the semifinal before we get to the finals. Washington outlasted Texas, came down to a final play. Talk about both of those teams as we lead into what you're going to face coming on Monday and what you saw in that matchup in the Sugar Bowl.
They're very evenly matched teams. They both did things very similar. I would say that Washington's offensive line did a better job of protecting in the first half. In the second half, it got a little sketchy. But holy smokes, I'm watching this Penix. How in the hell did he not win the Heisman?
He can,
like,
drop
what
it anyway.
Happened that was better than what I saw on Monday, right? Holy smokes, he throws it all over the place. They got one stud receiver and 2 other guys who are on their way to being that. I don't know what the stats is with their running back, and I don't know how that affects them.
Because he said he's playing. I don't know how healthy he's going to be, right. But they say he's playing.
Michigan sets up their whole everything they do around being physical and running the football. I don't know if Washington does that, but here's the other thing. Penix is not as mobile as Miro. So if you get there, you're going to get there. Now, he will run. Keep in mind, he was more of a runner before he got hurt.
Right.
And then he became more of a passer. But it doesn't mean he can't run. But I think it's going to be more of the same. You're going to have a larger collection of good receivers than you had last week. And I think the most important thing is going to be just play the style of football that got you there, right? We're going to put pressure on you. We're going to come after you a little bit. We're going to be sound in the secondary. We're going to swarm tackle when the tackles need to be made and let the game play out. Don't give up a whole bunch of big plays. They're a big play offense. Make them go down the length of the field. I mean, these are teams that aren't accustomed to going 10 plays, right? That's where Michigan lives. Oh, yeah, we'll go 10, 12 plays. So I'm not saying you're going to take the air out of the ball, but I am going to say don't get in a shootout with them, right?
Can they avoid it? Because you pointed out exactly what I'm afraid of, which is this team is not afraid to throw the ball. Now, Michigan has Will Johnson, who is a lockdown corner in my mind. If you look at his stats from the Bama game, there were 33 coverage snaps. 2 times he was targeted. That's it, and 0 catches left. And then you have Mike Sanristel, who's undersized, but is the captain of that defense and makes plays. Do they have the defensive backfield to stop this kind of offense as opposed to what they've seen before?
Yeah, because you know what stops that? Pass rush. So no matter what I think of what they can do in the secondary, I always have lasting in my mind the way they got after the quarterback up front. And so when you watch the Texas game, he sat back there and pat the ball for a long time. Michigan's got to shrink that time, right? They got to shrink that. They did the same thing with Milroe, who when he was sitting back there patting the ball forever, he could make some plays down the field.
Right.
You shrink that time. And Miro, you can't tell me he wasn't looking at the pass rush and not even looking downfield at points of the game. So more of the same. They got that film, so you're going to have to be a little more creative, you know, in how you do it. And then you're going to have to try to avoid the big plays. The big plays are, you know, especially for a team like Washington, is like if they get their track shoes on, it's going to be a long day. So just kind of, you know, play the same style of game you play, being aggressive, covering and being where you're supposed to be in the secondary. I was so impressed that no free runners, right? No guys running around the field scot-free because you, somebody missed an assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the most important thing that you're going to have going into this game is that they're going to have a lot of guys running in secondary. That's what they do. But you're going to have to be poised. You're going to have to be committed to what your responsibilities are. And if all else fails, go rush the quarterback.
I wanted to ask you about the moment. You're a guy who's been the MVP in a Rose Bowl. You've been there in these huge games with all eyes on you and the pressure. What's it like for these guys? I mean, they just went through this whole thing, the circus last mm-hmm. week, so they have a little bit of expectation of what it is. Michigan's gone through it before. What's it like for these guys going into Monday night for that game?
Well, I will say this. I probably never experienced what they're experiencing. Every time I had a big game, which was Ohio State, we had a month to get ready for the Rose Bowl. So you had time to wear down, reset, and start over, right? The only time I can think of where we played two big-time games, we lost them both. We started off against Notre Dame and then played the University of Miami in Michigan. Now, we never lost another game, but we lost both.
Whoa, whoa. That Miami game was painful enough for a whole season.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. But think about this. Mike Gillette misses a field goal against Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a 30-14 lead
with 6 minutes left.
6 minutes left, and we mm-hmm. lose, right? And we never lost another game. 3 points. 3 points. So, to be able to continue, keep in mind, Washington's doing the same thing, right? Except here's the difference. Michigan's been in the playoffs the last 3 years, or three out of the, four, right? Washington's their first time here. So from that standpoint, I'm not worried. And then you got a bunch of coaches, including Jim, that's been in bigger moments than this. Hell, he coached Super Bowl. So he knows how to keep everybody's head level. Whereas Washington's new to the party. Now, they may feel like an underdog. Like, what do they got to lose? Because nobody probably expected us to be here, which won't be accurate, but they'll lie and, you know, try to find any motivation that you can. And it's moments like this where, you know what you resort to? You resort to what you've done all year, your commitment to knowing what to do, how you play football, and you go out there and you play the best version of that again. That's all you can really do. You know, don't get caught up in all of the other stuff because it really – like, at that point, it doesn't matter. So anybody talking to the guys or anybody saying anything, guess what? When the game starts, it all goes away anyway, right? Once the game starts, like the Rose Bowl, you spend a week. We spent a week out there with all the Lowry's and all the Disneyland and all the, you know, and then practice and all the things you go through for setting up the press conferences and all this stuff, right? But as soon as that game starts and you put your mouthpiece in and get busted in the mouth, you forget about it.
Tell me if this makes a difference to you. These Michigan players have been together for a long time. Mm-hmm. From the captains of this team between Corum and McCarthy and San Ristel on the other side, these guys have now gone through the lows and the highs together. They've gone through all of the adversity together, but they've been together for all of this time. Mm-hmm. Washington has been put together a lot more through the portal.
Right.
These guys haven't been there yet, and they haven't played together that long. Does that give Michigan any type of advantage that these guys have been together this long and are that cohesive?
No. Like you would like to think.
Thanks.
But did you just see what Washington did to Texas?
I'm so glad you answered this way.
Who cares how they got there?
Yes.
Like, you know what? You eat a delicious meal. You don't go ask the origins of it. Great meal. Watch this great football team. Who cares how they put it together?
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
I love it.
I mean, they're 13-0.
Is there something to be said, though, for going through the battle with the person to the side of you that you know how they'll respond and they've been tested before?
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it has more to do with this. You know, the guys that I played football the most with, one being Steve Everett, during the course of a game in Cleveland, if I had something to say or he had something to say, he could come to me and say it because we've been playing football together for a long time. That's what that is. Because I respected him. He respected me. He knows we've been through it already. We've been through this. We've been through the Ohio State games. We've been through the bowl games and all this stuff. So when I come at you, when I come to you, I'm coming from a good place, right? When you don't know somebody and you've been playing football with them, you kind of have to go at it a little different because you're not sure how he's going to receive it, right? But I had guys on my team, even at Michigan. Like our running back room, we all basically came in together. Me, Jared Bunch, Tony Bowles, Chris Horn, Tracy Williams. We were all freshmen together. That would never happen nowadays. Two of them guys are transferred.
I was going to say, they'd be out real fast to another school if they weren't getting enough playing time.
Right. Think about that. I didn't really play till my third year.
Would that happen? That doesn't really happen anymore.
Would you have stayed?
Would I have stayed?
What a question.
Yeah, you know why I would have stayed?
Because of the sign that says those who stay will be champions?
No, that's not why. That's not why. Because I was sold. And I believed at the core of who I was that I was better than these guys and I deserved to play.
Do you think today's athlete, today's kids in college, that there are a lot of them that have that mentality anymore?
No, you know why? Because all the damn phone calls they get from the coaches. Come on over here. We'll treat you right, buddy. Right?
Right. So why is this allowed? Why is there not, once you sign, that's it. No contact. Why is it that the coaches are allowed to keep recruiting kids past when they commit?
Well, here's the deal. They're not usually allowed to do it.
But they do it.
But we have, because guess what? Let's think about this. Okay. Let's use our big brains. There is no way in hell the transfer portal could open up on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, the quarterback from Ohio State is where? In Wisconsin?
Syracuse.
No, now, is it TVD. Syracuse? He's at Syracuse. TVD from down here in Miami. He was at the bowl game in a Wisconsin jersey.
Mm-hmm.
That don't happen that fast with nobody. So, yeah. But here's the other problem. And I believe you want to fix this. You ready? There's two rules. Right, that I would change. If you're going to take NIL, your ass is playing in a bowl game. You can't. That's the way jobs work, folks.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you. If you get NIL money, you're not skipping the bowl. And if you get NIL money and you hit the transfer portal, you got to give the money back. That's how the real world works. So. Everybody want to keep it real. Everybody want to get everybody paid. I'm all for it. But then you can't have it both ways. If you are committed to this NIL and you want to get paid when you get here, then you got to have some kind of responsibility in that also. So you say, hey, you think you might want to hit the transfer portal? Don't take the NIL. Right? And so it's the NCAA's fault. Because when they could have made rules for it, they were so against it that now they let California, you know, put it in the law. Then everybody else had to follow suit. And then the NCAA had to. But then it wasn't regulated like it should have been.
But do you think that's going to – it's a great idea. It's the first time I've actually heard that idea. But my immediate thought was a lot of the kids that are going to get this NIL money – they're going somewhere else, not just for playing time. They're going because there's a better NIL deal somewhere else.
Okay, let me ask you this. If a coach signs a 10-year, $100 million deal.
Ain't worth the paper it's written on, but go ahead.
and he decides to leave after 4 years and go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
That school coming after him for some of that money because you have a contract. Now, they can fire you, right, but then they owe you the rest mm-hmm. of the money, right? Right. So if a college kid comes in and he's talking about NIL, 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 you can go get more NIL, but guess what? You got to pay us some money back so we can bring kids in that want to be here. Because what ends up happening is, say if you give a kid $1 million and he leaves after 2 years and goes somewhere else, now you not only lost the player, you lost the NIL money.
Look, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think it's a great idea, but my lawyer brain's sitting there going, there's 50 million ways to get around this. And that's the problem. And most of the ways to get around it aren't legitimate. Because what you're going to have is you're going to have smart business people doing what you say at one school. And then there's going to be other schools that are going to sit there and recruit kids by saying, by the way, you don't have to return your money if you come here. And kids are going to sit there and go,
somebody's
okay,
going to return that money. Like, you could put whatever twist you want on it.
Mm-hmm.
They sign it and say, hey, if you leave after this, you know, certain amount of time, right? Because here's the deal.
That's if you make it a universal rule.
Right.
Right.
But say a kid comes in, right? And he's backing up, like, say, Ohio State. Like, they had all this room full of Heisman Trophy winners in one room. Joe Burrow left.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if he would have got NIL money, and he decided to leave, right?
Right.
And Ohio says that, sure, you can go, because I think everybody loved Joe Burrow in Ohio. They let him go because they saw his situation. But what if they said, no, you're going to be playing soon as this guy leaves. I don't want you to go. And the guy goes, well, I can play next year if I go here. Okay, give the money back. Because this is why we gave you a 3-year NIL deal, because we knew you weren't going to play your first 2 years.
Leroy Hoyt for NCAA commissioner. Start the campaign, no, Jeff.
I can't. Like, I have no chance. It just, listen, there's too many people. Like, you know what's crazy to me? Think about this. You know why Florida State didn't make it into the playoff? Because of their own conference. Because last year they wanted to expand.
Right.
Guess who voted against it?
Florida State. Clemson.
The ACC.
Yeah.
No, not Florida State. Oh, the ACC.
Yeah.
So, Florida State doesn't get in. All these teams are looking at, wait a minute, we didn't get in because of our conference? Now they all want to get out of the ACC.
Which is stupid, because next year the playoff is 12 teams. So,
you don't want to represent the ACC. That's the hope.
Why? What's happened to that conference that it hasn't been able to keep up with? The Big 10, the Big 12, the SEC.
The problem is that, I mean, they got two championships in the last, what, 7 years?
Right.
More than the Big 10. So
they had an undefeated team this year.
What do you mean keeping up?
Well, from a conference and revenue standpoint, where their members view it untenable to be a part of it to actually succeed.
Well, that has nothing to do with football. That has to do with the people running the conference.
Gotcha.
Because guess what? When I turn on a Big Ten game, I'm looking at Progressive commercials. I'm looking at all these fancy commercials. All this. When I watch an ACC game, there's a potato peeler. it's commercials that you would see at 2 a.m. after getting home from the bar.
It was the same thing with the Pac-12. And look, those business people destroyed that conference.
Yeah,
you look at the number of good teams just this year, and if the fact that they couldn't get themselves a good TV deal, right, is beyond me.
Right, it is. But there you have it. Like, so teams are like, wait a minute, like, either do something or we out. And you know, arrogant people in the NCAA feel, don't worry, we'll find somebody else. Really, you gonna USC, right? Come on. It's like, and guess what? The funny thing is, we feel totally different about the Texas and Oklahoma, right? We always looked at that conference as it was like the top four and then that conference.
Right.
Because they couldn't play no defense.
Well, and now you've got, I mean, look, the championship is basically a Big Ten game. you guys will have a rematch of this in like October of next year.
You know what's amazing is that Washington reminds me so much of Urban Meyer's Ohio State, right? Like just with the athletes they have on the outside going down the field. They don't run it as well as Ohio State did back in the day. But holy smokes, do they have some talent offensively.
Yeah, but you just violated the rule of the show. No discussion of Urban Meyer.
Jeff has a Jeff doesn't deal well.
All right, Leroy, we're going to ask you for a pick.
I'm going to pick Michigan 30 to 21.
Who's the MVP?
Who is going to have and I'm thinking of this in a kind of who has to have a big day for Michigan to win?
I think Blake Corum.
To me, it's Blake Corum.
Yeah, I think it's Blake Corum.
Because the running game sets the tone for everything else that happens offensively.
Plus, it keeps Washington's offense off the field. Yeah. And so if you guys can control the ball, it's funny, you're not a ball control offense per se, but if you can run a ball control offense, Washington can't get those wide receivers and that quarterback on the field, and you guys got a much better game.
Well, and then the other thing is, man, when you run the ball consistently early,
they get tired late.
When you get into the second half, like those hits don't hurt as much.
Tell me about that. You're a guy, okay, you've done that. I mean, we'll let you go. I know we're going long, but you're a guy who's run into that pile and those players on the first play of the game. And then you're a guy that at the end of the game, when they've been beaten down the whole game, you get that run and you break the run that you couldn't in the first because they're just so tired now. What's that like in terms of mentally for a guy?
I tell this story all the time. So I forget who we were playing. And usually, if you notice, running backs don't talk trash because we can't initiate contact. We're getting hit, pushed, poked. They're trying to break everything that you are as a football player to get you not to play hard, right?
Right.
And so one time I got tackled, it was like a 2-yard gain. The linebacker got up, mushed me in the face. It was going to be all day, baby, all day. I said, come see me in the fourth quarter. That's what I said to him.
Yeah.
In the fourth quarter, he ran up in there and I put my helmet underneath and we just went for a ride for like 10 yards. And I got up off of him and I said, excuse me, what'd you say?
You don't remember his name?
I can't hear you. No. I can't hear you. But that's it. My whole football career, when I was at Michigan, when I was at Cleveland, wherever I was, is that I prided myself on the fact that no matter what you did to me, you weren't going to break me, right? I thought it was comical that you were spending so much energy talking to me to try and get, we haven't figured out yet. You're not going to do this to me? So you're just wasting energy. So from that standpoint, it when you have backs that do it and you know it, you can feel it, right? You know when they're those guys. Like, guess what? You think Blake Corum gets that 17-yard run in the first quarter? Right? But after being worn down for a whole game, instead of hitting him, they reach him for the ball, right? That's football. If you can, that's why you always hear coaches say, I didn't stay patient with the run, right? I should have been more patient with the run.
Well, that is the one thing that Harbaugh never regrets.
Never.
There will never be a day that Jim Harbaugh comes out and says, I should have stayed with the run and I got away with it.
31 to 20 never. Means I have to be careful what I text Jeff and he may be hyperventilating during the game. So,
I could tell you that there's a lot of Michigan people that are grateful for Leroy and the stuff that he did for that university and the way he carries himself for that university. So we really do appreciate you coming on our show.
Anytime, Jeffrey.
Thank you so much, Leroy. You take care of yourself, and I will give you a guys, go blue. Go ahead.
All right, guys. Did it hurt? It almost seemed like that hurt a little bit.
What hurt?
Who you said, I'll give you guys a go blue. It's not like it hurt.
Well, I'm a Rutgers guy.
It hurts him. He went to Rutgers.
I've suffered through.
My program director went to Rutgers.
So ask your program director. Jamie Morris laughs about this when I tell him. Rutgers was 0-11 my freshman year. They were the worst team ranked by Sports Illustrated. So I, you know, going to the Pinstripe Bowl this year is like progress for me as a fan.
First of all, what does that say about the University of Miami?
Believe me, we used to get our butt kicked by Miami. They would give away like a hot dog and a bus ride and a free ticket to the game, and everybody would leave after the first quarter when they're down 21-0. Like, that was my fandom. So Jeff has taught me what it's like to actually be able to root for a big time school. That was not something that what I came up with as a sports fan there. So that's, by the way,
Leroy, you met my son. My son said that he has never seen me that stressed out as around the time that I texted you and said, I can't take this anymore.
it's something. Listen, I got to tell you, like, I was scared out of my pants. And here's what I hate about where I am in sports right now. I can't do nothing about it, right? All I can do is watch and cheer. And that's I don't know how fans do it. Holy smokes.
I'm just going to tell you, as somebody who's known you for way over three decades now, that more people like you need to get involved. Like, there should be, the NCAA should have a committee of former players who made it to the NFL, who have stayed in the sports industry, who can put together recommendations of common sense things to get things done, because they don't do anything.
That would make too much sense.
You know why common sense doesn't work in the world today? There's one word that gets in the way.
Money.
Yeah. Come on. Like, think about it.
But that's also the incentive for common sense.
Every situation you've been in where money was involved, common sense is out the window.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's all of my clients.
Well, Jeff would say I bring no common sense to the show, but what else can I do? Leroy Horde, we can't thank you enough for the time. Good luck to Michigan, and we'll talk to you again soon, man.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
All righty.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825. Repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.
Welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us. What a fun conversation with Leroy. You know, you Michigan guys, you're pretty excited about what's going on right now. I don't blame you.
Yeah, we'll see how fun the conversation is next week.
I am very looking forward to that conversation about what the experience is like in Houston at the game versus what I see on TV. And hopefully I have a happy Jeff to do the show with. Leroy did touch on the Eagles. You moved him off of that quickly. Nicely done, Jeff. But
we're coming back to it anyway.
Well, we got about 10 minutes left, so I figure we should talk some NFL.
Good, then I'm going to ask the question.
Go for
okay,
it.
Now I'm going to put you on the spot. Okay. Ready for this?
Because this always goes so well when you do it.
Yeah. Way. Should Nick Sirianni be fired?
No, but I think the coordinator should be. I don't think you fire a coach that's made the playoffs 3 years in a row. They're going to make the playoffs. But I have some serious concerns about both his coaching decisions, the disorganization on the defense and the offense. I mean, you see them. If you watch the replay of the All-22, you just see guys running around not knowing where they're supposed to do that. Last touchdown of the game by the Cardinals, the defense had no clue.
So is Nick Sirianni a good coach, or did he have good assistants? That's why I'm asking the question. I'm not a take somebody's job kind of person. I'm not the guy who jumps to fire people. But the fact is that his offensive coordinators left and it's been chaos. I mean,
yes,
AJ Brown has not been known as a malcontent in his years in the NFL. And it is clear that there are problems, including AJ Brown alluding to the fact that at the end of the game,
they called their own play.
They ignored the coaches and called their own play, which, by the way, led to an interception to lose the game.
That then they gave credit to the coach for covering it up. Look, I think that a coach...
Whoa, don't gloss over that. Well, what do you mean they gave credit to the coach for covering it up?
AJ Brown said, I give credit to the coach. He took the blame. He didn't throw the players under the bus for changing the play.
The players threw the coach under the bus, and I'm supposed to sit there and pat the coach on the back?
No.
Because he didn't sit there and throw the player under the bus?
I didn't. I said that's what the players said. coaches have to have their players back and have the confidence. I don't believe he's lost the locker room, but I don't believe the coordinators are using the talent in the way that they need to. Now, by the way, I think there's a talent deficit. I think you let talented linebackers like TJ Edwards walk out the door, and you've had a linebacker shuffle this year. I think you made other decisions. You let Javon Hargrave go to San Francisco. These two young rookies are
fading. Yeah, but you jumped right. Look, you want to go straight to the defense. The defense is awful, okay? Yeah. There's no question the defense is awful. But the offense has not been very good, and you don't seem to be willing. Look, you're a parent of two kids. If your kids don't have your back, you don't sit there and reward them for it.
You're
somebody
right.
Should be benched.
I think that this whole thing is backwards. I told you a few weeks ago, you have Brian Johnson running Nick Sirianni's offense with Matt Patricia running Sean Desai's defense. That's not how it should work. And the players are clearly confused. Now, whether Sirianni will go, I don't know. I definitely think there'll be coordinator changes. There's no imagination in this offense. There's no motion. There's no movement. Well, it is. It's a coaching issue. They're not putting the players in the right positions to do well. You know, you watch the tape. You see guys coming. They're doing an all-out blitz, okay? The defense is against the Eagles. The Eagles have guys doing long go routes. There's no hot route. There's no slant. There's no outlet for Jalen. So it's a coaching issue. But I don't know that the head coach will be the one that takes the fall.
Well, you've already had two coordinators leave. You've now had one demoted in the middle of the season. Your new defensive coordinator was a mess when he was the head coach at Detroit. And by the way, he's now got defensive linemen dropping back into coverage.
Drives me.
Explain how you're supposed to. First of all, I don't understand the logic that in general. At the end of a season, telling a defensive guy on the front four to drop back into coverage when he has no experience doing it and has no idea where the rest of his teammates are going to be at that moment. Makes no sense.
Not at all. It drives me insane.
But the head coach should be saying to Matt Patricia, dude, we need to make tweaks.
I don't know what
he's
saying.
Make wholesale changes that are going to change the way people play the game.
You're 100% right, though I will point out their plan was not to have Sean Desai and Matt Patricia. Their plan, if Jonathan Gannon was going to go, was to have Vic Fangio. And because the actual originator of this defense, where if you're going to run the defense, you want the guy who created it, not the disciples who are trying to figure it out. And that's what you have here. Because of the way the Jonathan Gannon thing went down, you have Vic Fangio running a top defense in Miami, while you've got Sean Desai and Matt Patricia not figuring out where to line people up. So I don't excuse anybody. Like, they all share blame. But
okay,
I think,
so if you're not going to fire Sirianni,
it's not whether I am, Lori's going to fire.
I'm asking you if you were the owner.
No.
We wouldn't be doing the show, but if you were the owner.
No, I wouldn't.
Would you do? Okay, so let's go around the NFL. Who would you fire?
Well, I think a lot of
people. Who do you think is going to get fired?
I think a bunch of people are going to get fired, don't you? I mean.
You already have three openings in I was going to say San Diego, but in the Chargers. The Raiders and the Panthers.
I mean,
I can't imagine who's taking that Panthers job. It's going to be somebody with no spine.
Somebody who wants to have a drink thrown on them. How about David Tepper's behavior?
David Tepper is, you know, the NFL got rid of Dan Snyder.
He's the worst owner now, right?
And just replaced him with David Tepper.
He's clearly the worst owner right now. By the way, the fine that they gave him, they fined him $300,000.
Yes.
That's about $1.77 for him with his net worth. Just to point that out.
Why would the NFL not suspend him?
No idea.
Take away a draft pick.
No idea.
Do something that hurts. You cannot. It doesn't matter what he threw on him on the fan. It matters that he threw something on a fan.
He now has, separate from the fan, he now has three fired coaches plus three interim coaches, zero winning seasons, zero playoff games, multiple outbursts, and the worst sign and trade in the history to now give his number one pick to the Chicago Bears.
Well, if somebody hasn't coined it already, can we start just calling him David Tepper?
Oh, there you go. You're the trademark guy. You gotta get on.
I really should be jumping. I don't want to deal with the guy either. Forget it.
You'll be okay. Go ahead. Because I have one more thing I want to get to.
Belichick gone.
Yeah, but I think he ends up in like a San Diego or someplace. I think he ends up coaching next year, just not for New England. I think that's kind of run its course. Arthur Smith in Atlanta. I mean, I think they have more talent than what they've played, though I don't think they're that good of a team. I think those are the guys on the hot seat. I don't know what the Bears will do with.
Why would they keep? They have the number one pick now.
Well, they have to decide what they're going to do.
They have another top 10 pick.
Do they trade Justin Fields and take a quarterback?
Yeah, I think that's what they do, because that gets, and that nets them probably another first or second round pick.
What about
if whoever the coach is gets to come in and just mold the team from scratch?
I would
with a really good haul of young players.
I would tell them to trade Justin Fields to Denver, but Denver got rid of all their draft picks to now get rid of Russell Wilson. And we haven't been on the air since that contract was bought out. I need your thoughts on the way the Broncos handled this, telling him earlier in the season to take a pay cut before a game, which you're the contract guy. Mm-hmm. And then when he didn't, they let him play out, and then they benched him, and they're going to cut him, and they're going to pay $50, $60, $70 million.
Yeah, but what they did was there's apparently an injury clause in there, and it guarantees part of his contract beyond what's already guaranteed. You cannot risk with Russell Wilson having to pay any more than they've already hemorrhaged on him. It might be one of the worst trades ever, and you cannot risk him getting hurt. So
he was acquired for three players, six draft picks, two of them first rounders.
Yeah.
And so he lasted. Well,
are you suggesting that they should have played him?
No.
I don't think they've done anything wrong.
I'm surprised it lasted that long, frankly. I'm not saying they should have played him. I'm just surprised it lasted that long. All right, we got like 50 seconds left. The Eagles win this weekend? They're playing your Giants. Does it matter?
I think the Eagles need this game, regardless of whether it changes seeding or anything. They need this emotionally. They need this for momentum going into the playoffs. And I think, yes, the Giants need to lose this game in order to lock up a top five pick.
Well, the Giants have needed to lose, and Tommy Cutlett screwed that up for you a couple weeks ago. And
yeah, but he's not playing this week. I think it's Tyrod Taylor again. So, you know, unless Tyrod gets hurt, Tommy Cutlass isn't coming in.
Well, they are.
And I don't think it changes anything one way or the other. As long as unless the Eagles say that we got nothing to play for and just stop playing their starters in the second half, the Eagles should have this game locked up.
That's the last word. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.